And somewhere we must come to see that we must rise up and stand on our own two feet and say to our white brothers that we are determined to be men. This is what the movement is saying. We are somebody. We are determined to gain our freedom. And we are going to start with ourselves by freeing our own psyche, our own souls. This is where we've got to start first. For you see, in the final analysis, if we are going to be truly free, nobody else can do that for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do that for us. No Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do that for us. If we are going to be truly free, we must reach down into the inner depths of our being and sign with the pen and ink of assertive manhood our own Emancipation Proclamation. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Tennysonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
And welcome. Welcome to On the Real Side, November the 10th, 2016. I am Emmett Abatido. Today, a special election recap, the 2016 election. Review, historical review, commentary, and analysis by yours truly. But first, to place in perspective what we're going to be talking about, I entitled the talk today, When Black Folks Don't Vote and Why. Is this the fruits of civil rights? On the real side. But first, the relevant perspective of Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., who said, if you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything you understand will only confuse you. Malcolm said, the black vote decides who go to the White House and who go to the doghouse. Which was and remains very real and very true. And who went to the doghouse was none other than Hillary Rodham Clinton. Because deservingly, black folks did not turn out for her. We'll get off into that in a minute. But one of the problems that we have as a people is that we don't have voices that are mainstream, that is, to tell us what the hell is going on, what's been going on. And each new generation starts off with a blank slate, with a clean slate, not knowing beans from buckshot about what happened just 60 years ago. We're not talking about ancient history. We're talking about things that have happened in the past 200 years. That's very relevant to what we experience today. And if we had that information, we wouldn't be tricked and we wouldn't be dismayed at what appears to be inconceivable events. I'm experiencing a kind of deja vu. Because in 1970, which was my first exposure on the air, when I was invited to do an analysis of what happened in the black community dealing with the 1970 election. And at that time, Ben Baldwin was the program director of Ring Radio. And we were at a victory party for Sam Marcel, who won the mayorship of Atlanta, Georgia, the last white man to be the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia. And his vice mayor candidate, who was victorious, was none other than my good friend Maynard Jackson. And we're at Sam Sell's brother's house, doing the victory thing. And Ben asked me if I would mind coming on the air and doing a summary of what happened in the black community. And that began my career, such as it was, into broadcasting and into offering commentary and analysis on anything and everything that's relevant. So here we are again. Here I am again. Now, it is 2016, and I find myself at the same place, offering analysis and commentary on what just happened. Now, for the record, I think those who have been listeners to On the Real Side know that I was not in any way, shape, form, or fashion neutral on the question about black folks not, or the Clintons not deserving the black vote. And anybody but Hillary was my position. And also, I have said to many people whenever it came up, I never said it on the air, that I knew that Donald Trump was going to win. There was no question in my mind that Donald Trump was going to win. And this is not because I'm some, you know, brilliant guy or anything else like that, but I do remember the things that I've read. And at 75 years old, I've not only read many things, but I've lived through many things. And I hope to bring some of those things to you youngsters that you may use, you may choose to investigate more fully and understand that there's a pattern here. Trump is not an aberration. He's not someone that came from nowhere. He's not someone that no one knew that Trump was going to win. That's all part of the theater that white folks have maintained to keep people snookered about who's really running things and what's really going down. So with your permission, I'm going to take you on a little journey. I'm going to take you on a journey that, to me, kind of sets the stage for what we saw the other day. And hopefully we'll get an opportunity to have the time to talk about what we need to be about tomorrow, because there are many people who are kind of lost. And I told my wife that there would be demonstrations in opposition to Trump. And she said, no, they're not. I said, yes, they will, because they don't know what else to do. They've been misled. They've been deceived. Bernie betrayed them. And they don't know what to do. And they have no real program. They have no real political sophistication. So when you're in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout. It's unfortunate, but that's where we are. So let's go back in time to the 1876, yes, boys and girls, 1876 presidential election of Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel J. Tilghman. And it was called the 1876 Compromise. And what it was in effect, and you know, folks, you got to understand that my position is that I'm going to take you to the water. I can't make you drink it. And I'm not going to spoon feed you. If you're interested in understanding what the hell is going on, et cetera, you're going to have to get off your duff, make some notes, and research and Google and go to the library and do your own research. I don't want you to believe anything I'm saying simply because I'm saying it. I want you to understand what's going on. And these are clues that I'm sharing with you. And I can't give you all the background. I can't give you all the analysis. But I assume that for those who are ready, they'll be able to, once their nose is pointed in the right direction, they'll be able to handle what needs to be done. So we're at 1876, and there was a deadlock as to who was going to be the President of the United States and the senators, et cetera. You know, it was up in the air. And a deal was cut. A deal was cut. Now, there's no documentation for this, you know, because when they really do dirty stuff, they don't have nobody, you know, scribing what's happening. But it's largely understood and believed, based on events that happen, that Rutherford B. Hayes, Republican, agreed to betray the black vote, to betray the black Republicans. And yes, boys and girls, blacks were Republicans. The party of Lincoln was Republican, and blacks were Republican. And the compromise was that Hayes would agree to continue the withdrawal of federal troops in the states of Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, who were strongholds of Republicanism. And notice these states have huge black populations. And during the so-called Reconstruction, the federal troops were there to protect and to ensure that the Reconstruction would move forward and that violence and terrorism would not go unaddressed to suppress black participation in political life in the South, and specifically in those states. And Rutherford B. Hayes betrayed the black voters and his own party and basically gave up those states to the Democrats. And he was elected the president of the United States. And all he had to do was sacrifice and cause the death of thousands and thousands of people, PMIAs, the people made in America, the direct descendants of those captured and enslaved prisoners of wars, who trusted the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, to deliver on their promises, as the black community delivered on theirs. Now, there are lessons to be learned from this that our House nigger leadership has not chosen to learn and certainly has not shared with the masses of black people. That the nonsense that the Civil War was fought about slavery was evident in the Hayes-Tillman Compromise. When it was suitable, when it was politically advantageous to cast off and cut adrift the former enslaved, there was no hesitation, and neither was there any hesitation to move aggressively by the Southern Democrats to unleash a reign of terror on PMIAs. and the Klan, and you name it, they did it. So it couldn't have anything to do. The Civil War couldn't have had anything to do with the welfare of black people. The welfare or the delivering on the promise had nothing to do. And yet there are people today and people who voted for Donald Trump did so under the mistaken understanding that blacks have always been given too much and that white people fought and died for them at Appomattox and Shiloh and all the rest of that nonsense. Yes, people died, but they didn't die in the interest of PMIAs. So black people were betrayed by the Republican Party and they fled to the other political party. Now, when I was growing up, we had something called Dixiecrats. And these Dixiecrats were the ones that always prevented the Northern Democrats from delivering on the promises that they made to the PMIA community for their vote. And because of misleadership, because of the betrayal of Reverend Chickenbone and other people that are sucking on the tit of Jewish influence and money, through the NAACP and all the organizations that they created to control us, to use us, to advance their political agenda. That's where we found ourselves. So, Dixiecrats were racist white politicians that were members of the Democratic Party. And I heard as a boy the oft-repeated excuse that the Dixiecrats were preventing the Democrats from delivering on their political promises. And year after year after year after year, election after election after election, black people bought the bullshit and were misled again and again and again to support the Democratic Party. And folks, I wouldn't give you a half a cent. There's not a half a cent difference between a Republican and a Democrat. That's too much money. That's too much. They have one pocket on the left side, and the other pocket is on the right side covering one ass. The only difference is in our imagination. Which brings me to the events of 1970. There was a lot going on in 1970. There was a lot going on in 1968. And I want you to know that what you witnessed with Donald Trump was a rerun, was a replay of the politics of George Wallace. Yes, George Wallace, whose slogan, as he was talking to the segregationist, "Stand up for America." Who was it that said that patriotism is a last refuge for scoundrels? Well, the cry of terrorism needs to be understood to be the same. So, George Wallace, and there's a great documentary about him setting the woods on fire, would have been the first independent turn Democrat that would have been elected president. That's why they shot him. He could have done it. And we've got these turns of events. In the 1970s, we had things called backlash politics. We had things called the Southern Strategy. We had men like Jerry Falwell. We had innocuous entities called a silent majority. All of these people and organizations were code words, code names used to give a made-up face for racist politics as usual in America. Racism, as Neely Fuller has said, is the religion of America. The God that they worship in America is the God of white supremacy. And when you watch Setting the Woods on Fire, you'll see how it was understood by the politicians that if they want to mobilize the white voter, if they want to get the white voter to jump through hoops against his own best interest, I might add, you got to play the race card. And it's amazing that people have accused blacks of playing the race card, which is an absurdity. But the race card has always been the card that white politicians and the power structure has used against both black and white voters. So we have the Moral Majority under Nixon, Southern Strategy, Barry Goldwater, names that are unfamiliar to you, but Barry Goldwater identified that he, as an independent, captured 5 Southern states. And based on the Heritage Society's platform of austerity and reducing welfare and all the rest of that right-wing business, the Southern Strategy was born. And all Donald Trump did was replay the Southern Strategy, demonstrated and proven by Barry Goldwater, George Wallace, Richard Milhouse Nixon, etc. And I want to add a personal commentary on Richard Milhouse Nixon, who was a better president for PMIAs than Bill Clinton and Obama combined. combined. Almost like The Godfather. It took me decades to figure this out, boys and girls. That the good guy that PMIA should have been rooting for in the movie The Godfather was the dude that was cast as the bad guy. Who acknowledged that, yes, he allowed blacks in his organization and he allowed Hispanics in his organizations. And what we were witnessing was the difference between a criminal who was progressive and the Don and the Godfathers who were absolute card-carrying racists, but were so caught up in the magic. I was so caught up in the magic and in identifying with Marlon Brando and identifying with Al Pacino that I just lost it. I lost who the hell I was supposed to, whose side I was supposed to be on. And it's taken me over 25 years to realize that I was rooting for the wrong guy. And this is exactly where black folks find themselves. We're always rooting for the wrong guy because he's cool or he blows a horn or he takes a bite from a black man's sandwich or some nonsense that has nothing to do with reality. So, the Southern strategy has worked again. White people are engaged and mobilized to go along with a program of suppression, a program of reversing what they're told is welfare, undeserved welfare, undeserved benefits, undeserved better working conditions, undeserved laws that protect the environment, undeserved this, undeserved the other. And white folks have given Donald Trump, who is an establishment candidate, make no mistake what side Donald Trump's bread is buttered. He is an establishment candidate. And his right-wing political programs and proposals, such as the absurdity of building a wall on the border of Mexico, which is a contradiction in terms because it's the U.S. that controls the economy of Mexico and South America. And people are fleeing South America and Mexico because of these suppressed wages and job opportunities and growth that is controlled by the gringos up north. I mean, but poor white folks have never shown themselves to be very intelligent. A couple of times, historically, they have. When they join with the bonus army, join with blacks to get the government to pay what was promised to the veterans and General MacArthur turn tanks loose and fix bayonets loose, and they didn't care whether you were black, they didn't care whether you were white. The establishment said, we are not going to allow blacks and whites to win. And they did not. It's not an easy thing to comprehend how deceitful this system is. But oftentimes, one has to simplify a process by understanding the effect. A drug, for example, is classified by its last effect. A depressant, although you may get high, but it becomes a depressant because at the end of the trip, you are cast into despair. And then you got to get another fix in order to get, and so it's like a up and then it's a yo-yo, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And that is what people are struggling to live with. Up and down, up and down. White people not voting their own interest because the Jewish control media has maintained the theme and maintained the illusion that anything black is bad. Anything black is suspect. And who wants to be identified with losers? Who wants to be on the side of drug dealers, on the side of people who don't support their families? And the fact that white people have always been the number one beneficiary and the number one recipient of welfare, food stamps and everything else. But that's hardly ever mentioned. So when the news tells them, or the whatever, they have 100 ways of telling the same lie, that white people are getting screwed. And you're getting screwed because black people are getting what you should and are entitled to. And racism, the mental illness of racism, prevents them from understanding what is the end effect of the program that the world bankers, that those who control the media, those who own the media, who happen to be Jewish, who happen to be Jewish, are promoting their agenda has nothing to do with the working class, blue, black, gray, green, or purple. Nothing. And their only card, the only card they have, which is a pretty big one, is that they control the source of information. And they control information about information. So it's very unlikely, unless you have an uncle, have an aunt, or accidentally find a book that talks about the Hayes-Tilden compromise, that talks about Barry Goldwater, that talks about the politics of George Wallace, that talks about the betrayal of the NAACP and the Urban League and other black organizations betraying and benefiting from the assassination of Dr. King. And the hornblower. And the hornblower. Who single-handedly could have benefited hundreds of thousands of victims of the federal drug laws. With the disparity between powder cocaine and crack, at a stroke of a pen, he could have done the right thing. And it had nothing to do with his administration, because the results and recommendations were formulated under Nixon's and Carter's administration. So all he had to do was just sign it. No political feedback or blowback at all. And I strongly suspect that the so-called black leadership that feeds on the suffering of the black community didn't want their livelihoods impacted either. Because now we got black lawyers doing the same thing that white lawyers were doing, ripping off their clients with the laws designed to further and advance more trouble, more despair, more inequities. Where do we go from here? This can be a hallelujah morning, but I submit to you that if your leadership starts talking nonsense to you about the will of God, and that God has a plan that we don't understand, is why Donald Trump got elected. You ought to lynch that bastard. You ought to snatch his head from his body, because he's an enemy. She's an enemy. Undeserving of taking another breath. Theoretically, of course. We're very tolerant, and we're very passive, and we go along with nonsense that's totally unjustified based on the urgency of the circumstances and times. And the last part of the title today is this the fruits of civil rights? What we are witnessing, what we have witnessed, black people staying home and sent Hubert Humphrey, who wanted to beat Richard Milhouse Nixon in 1970, blacks stayed home. They stayed home because they saw that there was no benefit. They experienced no appreciable difference in the quality of their life by the passage of the Civil Rights Act, by the Declaration of Affirmative Action. They saw no change in their lives, even though Reverend Chickenbone and the other house niggas were just getting fat like pigs. Just like they're doing right now. And the black community had enough sense not to listen to them, not to think that there was something very, very important in their life that was associated with the election of Hillary Rodham Clinton. So once again, the black voter is set adrift. The Republican Party doesn't want them. The Democratic Party doesn't deserve them. And they have no leadership. They have no leadership. And some kind of way, a miracle has to happen. A miracle has to happen that we are going to have to figure this thing out and start talking to each other, start meeting with our neighbors to figure this thing out and not rely on Reverend Chickenbone or the latest and the greatest would-be, could-be leader, self-appointed leader, the Panther this, the Nation the other. They've all failed us, but they've done very well for themselves. And they'll be crawling to the back door of Donald Trump, delivering us up. All he has to do is stand the stench of them and throw some meat on the ground and have them fight like dogs over the 30 pieces of silver that they're more than willing to continue their betrayal. Because they can only think of one thing: how to get over. How to get over. Getting over is the number one motive. The number one motive, unfortunate for the poor babies whose mamas suffered and sacrificed so they could get a piece of paper. They got that piece of paper, and to them, that's a hunting license to get over, not to serve, not to be accountable and responsible, but to get over. And that's why the whole idea of being a black capitalist is absurdity, because capitalism is predicated on the exploitation of non-white people. So who are you going to exploit, fool? Other than your brother, your sister, your cousin, your auntie, your uncle, your father, your mother, your grandfather, your grandmother, who's left? And I don't care how you dress up this pig, it still stinks. Like pigs stink. When blacks don't vote, and why? I take my hat off to those who didn't even bother to play the game. Because those who did play the game did not leave the polls with the ability to prove who they voted for. Nor does the system allow for a true recount of your vote. And if anything needs to happen, white people need to correct that. Of course, the powers that be don't want to correct that because the folks in Tel Aviv decides who wins an election. Because it's done electronically. Basically over unsecured lines. They've been able to hack those computer machines and still can hack them. But we have a choice, and we have a chance for a new beginning. Let us be not frightened, not cowered by Donald Trump. Because for the most part, black people's lives remain shitty no matter who the president is and has been. And no matter whether the economy is going up or whether or not the economy is going down or whether there's a recession or there's prosperity, black folks are basically kept at the same experiential level of sucking hind tit and catching hell. We have a choice. We're not helpless. But we have to be willing to take chances. For if the truth be known, you really don't have much of a choice or an alternative. Other than to go deeper into alcoholism, go deeper into smoking that poisonous stuff, go deeper into religion, stay in the church now, camp out in the church now. You don't ever want to come up for air now. You want to gain 15 or 20 pounds. Because you're eating your feelings because you're so terrified, like feeding the bees, smoking the bees. All of these things are worse than standing up. Look up and believe. And believe that we have what it takes to make a difference in our own lifetime. For on the real side, November the 10th, 2016, I'm Emmett Abatido.
And somewhere we must come to see that we must rise up and stand on our own two feet and say to our white brothers that we are determined to be men. This is what the movement is saying. We are somebody. We are determined to gain our freedom. And we are going to start with ourselves by freeing our own psyche, our own souls. This is where we've got to start first. For you see, in the final analysis, if we are going to be truly free, nobody else can do that for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do that for us. No Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do that for us. If we are going to be truly free, we must reach down into the inner depths of our being and sign with the pen and ink of assertive manhood our own Emancipation Proclamation. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Tennysonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. High. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.